From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Akwan and on demand as a podcast. It's Wednesday, September 25th, 2024. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Kunafchish, Hawa, Toksik News, some Salama for joining the conversation. On today's show, we chat with the Juno World Affairs Council and meet the speaker for tonight's presentation, The Middle East on Edge. It's the annual Capital Brewfest this Saturday. This annual fundraiser for Rotary is featuring over a dozen beer, mead, and cider makers from across the state. The UAS Fall Evening at Egan Lecture Series is back, and this Friday features Dr. Skylar Baer. We have a preview of the series and this Friday's lecture. And we'll chat with the Juno Chamber of Commerce. Those conversations, plus Tongass voices and more, coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Support from Hanson Gress, seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
You're listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Akbe, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Tonight at 5:15, so just in a couple hours from now, the Juno World Affairs Council, or JWAC, presents a lecture in their speaker series featuring Professor Steve Naiva from Olympia, Washington, titled The Middle East on Edge, Assessing the Prospects for a Regional War. And joining me now in studio are Professor Steve Naiva and from JWAC, Lauren Jones. Kunafchish Yadi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio. Wasa Iti, how's it going?
It's going good.
Going good.
Typical Juno weather.
Good to see you, Lauren. Yeah, exactly. We're just talking about right before we went on air. It's like, how is it out there? Typical Juno weather.
Typical Juno weather. Thank you. I'm happy to be here. And I'll do the requisite joke from someone from Seattle. I finally found a place that has more rain.
There you go. Yeah, from Evergreen College down there in Olympia, Washington. Yep. Welcome to Juno. Is this your first time in Alaska?
It's my first time, yeah.
Wow, that's so great. Are you here for a couple days or are you just in and out?
No, I decided to stay longer.
Oh,
tomorrow
nice.
I'll go hit the glacier, museums, and then stay until late Friday.
Awesome. That's great. Well, welcome to town. It's
so good
to have you here.
Yeah, great to be here.
Now let's talk about something depressing. No, just kidding. So it is interesting. So let's talk first about your background. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got started? Because you're like an expert in the Middle East. And so how did that find you in your life? When did this come to you as a thing that you were going to spend your life, you know, interested in?
It started early. I was born in Seattle. And then my father was in medical school and he took this 1 year residency. He had choices around the world and he picked Jerusalem. And so it was 1973 and we said, okay, we're going to Jerusalem. We knew nothing about the Middle East. And we ended up at a British hospital that was in the West Bank serving the Palestinian Arab population. And so here we are at a British hospital, Arab population. They took us in. That became our community. My father would do surgery on someone from somewhere in Gaza or the West Bank. And often they would invite us to visit their family afterwards if it was successful. And they usually were. We traveled around. And then ever since then, I came back to the United States and people would say, what's the Middle East like? And I heard all these stereotypes and assumptions. And I sort of became an educator about the Middle East, and then that led me to go to graduate school in political science. And I've lived all over the region. I've lived in Israel. I lived in the occupied territories, lived in Egypt, Turkey. I spent a lot of time in Morocco recently. I speak Arabic. I can read and write. And I take students about every 3 or 4 years. I take students abroad, often to Egypt, Turkey, and now Morocco. So yeah, this is what I do. I ran a magazine for a little while. I was the editor-in-chief of a magazine called Middle East Report, MERIP.org, MERIP.org. And I ran that for a few years with some of the leading Middle East studies experts in the country and actually around the world. Now I just, you know, I'm a professor at the Evergreen State College.
Wow. Not just a professor. You have so much knowledge and history to impart to all those students, I bet. So that's pretty interesting. Now, I know tonight, as I mentioned, the topic is the Middle East on Edge, assessing the prospects for a regional war. It seems, of course, you know, it's been in the news, of course, for the last year, dominating sort of the news cycle. And it's sort of ever moving in what's happening. So does your talk about this, does your teachings each day change based on what's going on in that particular region?
Oh, absolutely. We always joke, you know, people like me who do Middle East politics always joke that we have a file open every year that's called the current conflict in the Middle East. And we just try and put stuff in it because we never know when we're going to have to talk about it. And it's always changing. It's always moving on. And in fact, for tonight's talk, as I'll talk about at the talk, when I was asked to come up to Juneau to give the talk a month ago, the region was entirely different. Not entirely different, sorry. But the conflict I'm going to talk about was entirely different. Things have changed in the last month, particularly for those following the news with what's going on in Lebanon. Mm. Things have changed significantly. So the thesis of my talk a month ago is not the thesis of my talk tonight.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it just changed. So Lauren, when you were inviting Steve up, how did you decide to invite Steve to come and talk? And did you know that it might, his topic might change, you know, or at least the subject, the topic's the same, but the subject area might change?
I think it's on everybody's minds. Mm-hmm. Juneau, Alaska, a lot of us travel a lot. And I think a lot of us have traveled to the Middle East and in parts of it. I've got three or four friends that are overseas right now in Europe, and it affects Europe. It affects the EU. So I think it's a topic of interest to everybody. Steve was available, and that was great. It's a topic of high interest to a lot of people in Juneau. We had a travelogue last year. We had a person that was hiking in Lebanon, and part of this conflict started over there when she was there. So that was of interest to the members of the World Affairs Council as well.
I remember that. And you, of course, can find out more about Juneau World Affairs Council at jwac.org. That has all the sort of upcoming events and various mm-hmm. different things and goes into more detail about schedule of what's happening. Now is the idea that you had, that I had been given notes on, that there's a growing fear of a wider war across mm-hmm. the Middle East, but the truth is that a low-level war is already here. Mm-hmm. Is that still part of your talk this evening?
Yeah. So as I was saying a moment ago, my thesis a month ago would have been the low-level war is here, but it seems to have stabilized. But in the past month, we have seen a great escalation on a variety of fronts. And let me just make it clear for those interested in coming tonight or seeing what gets televised. There's two wars going on. There's the war in Gaza between Israel and Hamas in Gaza, and that's been going on since October 7th. But there's also been another war, a second war, in a sense, a shadow war going on between a variety of actors that are sympathetic to Palestinians or critical of Israel in Lebanon, in Yemen, in Syria, Iraq, and Iran, that has also been ongoing. And that was the secondary war that had sort of stabilized. And that's what I was going to talk about. But now that war seems to be changing, particularly in Lebanon. So there's another front being opened up. Mm-hmm. And I'm very concerned with what's happening, that we may now be closer to a regional war than we've ever been. A month ago, I would have said, we're not there. Mm. Today, we're really close. And I'll try and explain why and in what ways that we are.
And that just speaks to how quickly things
absolutely
change and yeah. move, yes, in terms yeah. of just what's going on over there.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. And are you still, there was another point I wanted to ask you about, this sort of paying particular attention to U.S. military deployments and policy aims and how regional de-escalation can take place. Is
right.
it, are, now this in that month that's changed, has that idea been able, has that idea changed as well in terms of what's going to be needed to...
A month ago, sorry.
Yeah, no, please.
Yeah, a month ago, I would have said U.S. deployments might increasingly be on the downslope, because it had seemed to have stabilized. There was movement towards a ceasefire in Gaza, and it looked like we have 40,000 troops over in the Middle East in a variety of locations. We have intensive commitments with lots of countries in the Middle East. But a month ago, I would have said that we weren't going to see, we were going to see decreasing deployments. Some of the carriers could have gone home. But now, in fact, the opposite's happening, because there's a real concern that, especially in Lebanon, between Israel and the group Hezbollah in Lebanon, that could spill over. It could bring in Iran. It could bring in the groups from Yemen. It could bring in groups from Iraq. And so the U.S. is now increasing its presence. Mm. Now, you asked the last part, what about de-escalation? Only a fool would predict the future in the Middle East. And I'm no fool, and I've been around long enough. So I don't know what's going to happen, but I would say the last four or five wars stopped when the United States decided it was time for them to stop. Mm. And I'm not sure if we're there yet, but I have a feeling if it starts to spiral out of control, the U.S. might step up and put an end to it. But we're in an election year. It's complicated.
That's what I was going to say, is we don't really get into too much politics on Juno Afternoon, but the idea that this is all happening during
that's
an election that's
part.
Like 40-something days away is pretty interesting.
Yeah. It's almost this window where you wonder if those in leadership positions feel like they can risk the political capital, given that there are domestic consequences. Mm. And again, I'm speaking as a political scientist. This is not about political points of view.
Yeah.
But that's going on. So we'll see what happens. But indeed, it does affect the United States in pretty significant ways.
And the last thing, I don't know if you're talking about this tonight, but I just noticed it in your biography and the areas of research that you are interested in. And I'm just curious about this. The similarities between recent Israeli and American warfighting strategies and techniques. Is that something that you teach, and like, can you give us an example of like one of those ideas?
Mm.
I know we don't have a whole lot of time, but
there's a lot there.
Yeah.
But basically, since 9/11 and the beginning of the war on terror after 9/11, remember with the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, and then of course more widely against Al Qaeda and the other Islamic terror groups. The U.S. and Israel have actually partnered on a lot of techniques and strategies, and in fact, for a while there, I would say the traffic was going primarily from Israel to the United States. For example, Israel has a lot of experience fighting with small networked actors and using assassination strategies or using very high-tech means of tracking down and targeting. And in fact, I would say the U.S. Pretty much adopted a number of those tactics and strategies and so on to go after Al-Qaeda, for example. Mm-hmm. At the same time, the U.S. also followed certain Israeli tactics and strategies that were not so successful. And I won't go into those details, but this happened a lot in Iraq and was one of the contributing factors to, I think, the failures the U.S. military had in Iraq. Mm. So there's a long alliance there, but it's important to say that the U.S. and Israel don't always share all the same points of view, don't share all the same strategies. They're very different kinds of powers.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And of course, you can find out more about this at Steve's talk tonight, The Middle East on Edge, Assessing the Prospects for Regional War. It's happening downstairs here at KTO in the studio at 5:15. It's sponsored by the Juno World Affairs Council. And Lauren, I know that there's some other things coming up this month for the Juno World Affairs Council. Can you mention a couple of those for us before we have to go?
The big one is we have a fall forum on the 18th and 19th of October. That's political authoritarianism on the rise in the 21st century. We have about five speakers coming in. It'll be here at KTO Studios. And just a reminder to people, all of these events are free. We have World Quest that this year will be, or 2025 will be February 1st, I think it is. That's our big fundraiser. And we use those monies during the year to bring in speakers. KTO is a partner with us, and so they get taped and then they get replayed. So all of it's free. There's also a travelogue. We have a Tuesday travelogue once a month. I think Kate Troll and one other person's on October 15th is doing that, and that's at Nickelodeon Theater, downtown Gold Town. It's at 5:15, goes for an hour. Enough people in Juneau travel, we can do 12 or so a year where people present their travels and where they go, and all of those are free as well.
That's fantastic. And I believe that if you can't make Steve's talk tonight, or if you're hearing this on the rear of the podcast, it will be broadcast on KTOO 360 TV this Sunday. Go to the schedule on KTOO.org to find out exactly what time that will be playing this Sunday.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, Kenneth Cheese, for being here.
Thank you, Boston.
Break a leg with your talk tonight. If you want to find out more about Steve, sites.evergreen.edu/Steven Niva. That's N-I-V-A is the last name and how you spell it, or just Google it, and I'm sure it will come up. And of course, for JWAC and all of their information and schedules, go to jwac.org. Gunnar Cheech, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next is Tongass Voices, the weekly perspectives from the homelands of the Occoquan and beyond. Enrique Bravo has been acting in Juneau for nearly 20 years. He didn't think he'd end up in Alaska, but he says the theater companies here have allowed him to play roles he never expected to. Bravo plays the titular role in Theater Alaska's Henry V, opening Friday at the Juneau Makerspace.
My name is Enrique Bravo. I'm a theater guy in town, I guess. I used to work for Perseverance Theater, but I kind of now I'm sort of do theater all over town. In high school, even junior high, where I'm from in South Texas, they had a very competitive theater program in South Texas, and they would, you know, we would go to these competitions on the weekend, and we would compete against each other with theater, and our school was very successful with it. I found out later that every dollar the football team, and this is Texas, mind you, every dollar the football team got also went to the arts program as well. I had a mentor there, my high school teacher, who really sort of believed in me and said, you know, you can really do this. And he was right. My buddy that actually runs the Theater Alaska, so we go way back. We met in grad school. He was working as a marketing director at Perseverance. And this is when I was living in New York. And he asked me if I wanted to come up and maybe do part of be part of the tribe for Hair, which was in 2006. And they got a grant back in 2000, I think, I want to say 2014, something like that, to actually pay for an artist in residence. And I put in my application for that, and I ended up getting that. So for 6 years, I was the actor in residence at Perseverance, which was kind of like a dream come true, honestly. I mean, I love Juno. That, and then I'm a little bit of a nature junkie. So I was just like, I would have never thought I was going to find it here in Juneau, Alaska, like when I was in my 20s. But it's crazy how it all sort of worked out. And I've been very fortunate. I think it's just this, seriously, this community. I mean, that's the other part of the piece of the puzzle that that has also kept me here and drawn me here. But that is part of the thing that I love about this community. I came from a town of 30,000. It has nowhere near the sort of arts community that we have here. I mean, the fact that we have 3-4 theater companies that are producing shows, I love Juno for that. And I try to never take that for granted. I have to say, Perseverance has given me roles that I never in my life would have thought I would have played. I played Atticus Finch. You know, I was able to do Cat in the Hot Tin Roof and play Brick. And yeah, even this last role with Indecent, you know, playing a Jewish man, you know, I will say that's also been a giant draw for me to come back as much as I did at the beginning. And then why I'm still here now is that those opportunities did not go like unappreciated, or because I was given those opportunities, I wanted to make the best of them, which sometimes I was just like, well, I also want to tell my story too, you know? So that's the thing that I think I'm looking for now in my career. I do want to like share part of my history and my upbringing, the roots that I have in Mexican sort of culture. My grandmother spoke nothing but Spanish. She didn't speak any English at all. We grew up in South Texas and, you know, 10 minutes away from the Mexican border. I think for me, those are the things that those are the stories that I'm also like now actively trying to find to tell for myself.
That was Enrique Bravo for this week's Tongass Voices. He's starring in Henry V, which runs September 27th to October 20th. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. The Capital Brewfest is happening. It's this Saturday, September 28th. It's a fundraiser for Rotary's ongoing efforts to support local nonprofits and community projects. It's being hosted by Rotary Club of Juno and the 58 Innovators Rotary Club, the newest Rotary in town. This year, they are featuring over a dozen beer, mead, and cider makers from all over the state of Alaska. The cities are numerous. There's Juno, Sitka, Haines, Kodiak, Talkeetna, Big Lake, Fairbanks. There's all kinds of cities. And this will all be happening at Centennial Hall. You can find out more at capbrewfest.co. And joining me now to talk more about it are John Blasco, CEO of Anchorage Distillery, who is on the committee, and Jamie Letterman, owner of Alaska Galore Tours, who is the chair of the committee for the 2024 Capital Brewfest. Gwyneth Cheesh, Hat Ye Adi, thank you so much for coming into the studio today to talk about this a little bit. What's Wasa Iti? How's it going?
Thank you, Boston, for having us.
Of course.
It's a pleasure to be here. Happy to share this awesome event with the community, and got another fantastic year. And this year, we don't care what the weather's doing because we'll be inside at Centennial Hall. So that's fantastic news. Tickets are going fast, but we do have the first event that happens is going to be the Brewer's Dinner, and that is this Friday evening. So if anybody's interested in that, got to get online and get those tickets. The reception is from 5 to 6. This is also happening at Centennial Hall. And then we have a 5-course amazing dinner crafted by V's Cellar Door that will be happening from 6 to 8.
So that's part of, so the Brew, well, it's all part of Brewfest, right? So
correct.
Brewfest. The afternoon event on Saturday is where you do all the tastings and you do all the things. But then there's also a dinner, which is the night before. And those are two separate ticketed events, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And we started the beer dinner early on because we really wanted to welcome the brewers from all around the state.
Right.
And kind of highlight, you know, we started with highlighting Juno beer. And then we've expanded a little bit just as we've grown the event. And when V wanted to do 5 courses, there's only 4 breweries in Juno. It's like, all right, well, we need to add another. So Harbor Mountain's going to be part of that from Sitka. But yeah, so all the breweries, you know, are represented there. But then we wanted to open it up to Juno folks to be able to meet the brewers and then just really see how well the beers pair with food. And it's a really fun night, really good food.
Now you, John, are the CEO of Anchorage Distillery. So you have some experience in pairing these drinks with food?
And unfortunately, we can't be a part of this event, you know, with the alcohol laws, but, you know, definitely love to be part of it. So, yeah, we do this up in Anchorage. We'll do different pairings with our spirits and food. And, you know, just, you know, wine, beer, spirits, everything. They all just have such a unique way of pairing with food, whether it's cooked with it or just the way it tastes with different types of food.
Right. So, even though you're a distillery, I'm sure you have some experience with the beer.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I thought you were talking about the
personal. No, but the personal experience.
No, 100%. Well, I spent 5 years working at Alaskan Brewing.
Yeah.
And so a lot of time there with that, too, as well.
So. Yeah, nice. Okay. And that, so that's really fun. So remind us again about this. Can you tell us a little bit about the new Rotary Club, the Rotary 58? Do you know anything about that? I'm just curious about that.
I do, actually. And we were chartered in... oh gosh, October of 2016 or 17, if I remember correctly. And there's only a couple of us from the original charters that are still in the club, but we have teamed up with the Juno Rotary Club, and we just love to be a part of all the clubs in Juno. And so, yeah, we meet in that we're the only evening club. We actually meet at Alaska Brew twice a month. So, you know, if you want to meet with a club that drinks beer twice a month, you know, we're the ones.
And how do you find out more about the, because I love the name, 58 Innovators Rotary Club. How did that name come up?
Well, because we really wanted, a 58 obviously is our, you know, our 58 degrees here in Juneau, our location on the, in the big scheme of things. But Innovators, we wanted a name that would be forever lasting. And, you know, innovation is just a thing that's never going to go away. And, that's kind of how it came about.
I love that. Okay. Yeah. So so we have the dinner on Friday, mm-hmm. and that is a five-course meal from V's, which sounds unbelievably amazing. And then so Saturday, it starts at 1 to 5, although there's a VIP session at noon. Tell me a little bit about
that. Yeah. So regular tickets are $40. If you want a VIP ticket, $65 gets you in the door an hour early. So you kind of got some prime time to do some tasting without a crowd. And anyway, tickets are selling fast. So if anybody's interested, please do. There are some package. There is a package available. You can do a VIP dinner package, which is $150. But back to Saturday, 1 to 5. And there will be live music. And this year, we actually will have some non-alcohol beverages available. So this is a crowd pleaser for anyone over 21. So there will be some different options there, not just the alcohol for everybody to enjoy as well.
I love that. Okay. And, and there's also going to be some music and
yes,
such?
Yes, a band, Getting Stranger.
So, oh, yeah.
Yeah. So anybody who's familiar with them, we're going to have them. There's actually going to be a food court as well. So there will be five different food options out in the courtyard at Centennial Hall. And yeah, lots of fun stuff going on.
So the food trucks, the bands, the beer, all of that, and it's all for a good cause. It's raising money to help out the community and humanitarian works that you do. Are there any projects that the different Rotary clubs are working on right now?
Currently, we have got a quad club. We call it the quad club because there's four of us. Project going on with the food bank. So they're in need, if anybody knows, of freezer and refrigeration. So we have got a grant together right now that we're working on to get some of their freezers replaced. So that's our big quad club project at the moment. But there's lots of things that we do together. And also separately, we all kind of have our own projects as well. But a lot of shelters around town and.
Yeah, the shelters. And John, are you in the Innovators Rotary?
I'm
or are you in the
Rotary Club of Juneau? So the other club that's a part of this.
And that's the one that meets downtown?
Yep. Tuesdays at next door here at the Ramada. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. That's so great. And is there anything? Oh, you mentioned the ticket price, mm-hmm. and the best place to go is the website that I gave out.
Right, and it's capbrewfest.com.
Oh, it's .com. Yeah. It references to it goes to .co, but the easiest thing to do is go to .com.
Yeah,
I guess,
yeah.
And
yeah.
then forwards.
It'll get you
to that. It'll get you to the right spot. So that's good. Well, that's great. Is there anything else that we missed? Is there anything else that we need to mention about this? This is an awesome event. So we maybe want to shout out some of the sponsors.
I'd love to touch on the breweries and wineries first.
Yeah, for sure.
I've been a part of this since the first year our club came up with this 13 years ago, and I've been fortunate enough to be able to help get all the breweries here. And this is such a cool year for us. Start at the top, we've got from Fairbanks, Black Spruce is coming down from Fairbanks, and then Big Lake you mentioned. So we have Susitna Brewing coming from Big Lake. Girdwood Brewing, which is awesome place down there in Girdwood, Alyeska area, is coming. Haynes is coming for the first time since before COVID. So super excited to have them back. And then we've got Icy Strait coming over from Hoonah. And then there's several breweries that are going to be represented through the distributors. But you're going to have pretty much almost every brewery in Alaska represented. Cooper Landing, Kenai River, Cat Six. Broken Tooth, which is Moose's Tooth up north, as most people know it, 49th State. But then I don't know. It's a huge list. Midnight Sun, Alaskan Brewing, Harbor Mountain, Barnaby, Devil's Club, Forbidden Peak, Denali. I mean, everybody.
Wow. That is a list.
There's actually about 19 total that are coming, which is just awesome for us to have them back. And, you know, we couldn't do this without the sponsors, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
I have to give the first shout out to next door to the Ramada because they give us the hotel rooms to allow all these people to come into town.
Oh, that's nice.
You know, hotel rates aren't cheap here in Juneau. And you know, to fly here, bring your beer here. Alaska Air Cargo is helping, you know, with contributing with the freight, but then the hotel rooms. And there's a lot of other, you know, Alaska Marine Lines help get our glassware here. KTOO, you guys support us. True North, Spoon Island Development. So many key sponsors on our website. But it's an event that takes a full, huge community, and it comes together. And it's a beautiful day.
That's fantastic. And you see the full list of sponsors on the website, capbrewfest.com. It's amazing. And to have all of that opportunity to be able to taste and sort of, you know, try out some of these beverages, as it were, on Saturday from 1 to 5, and at noon if you want to pay a little bit extra and get in there earlier. And it all goes to a good cause. It goes to the Rotary Club of Juneau and 58 Innovators Rotary Club to help out with all of their efforts in making our community better. And of course, the dinner is on Friday night from 5 to 9. That will also be at Centennial Hall. And you can get all of the information at Capital Brewfest. Oh, no, CapBrewFest.com. And it's easy. But if you just type in Capital Brewfest Juno to Google, you're going to get to the right place.
Or Facebook. Right?
Or Facebook. Anywhere on there, you're going to be able to find it. Jamie, John, thank you so much for coming in and telling us about this awesome annual event, the 13th annual Capital Brewfest going on this weekend right here in Juno. Thanks so much, Gwyneth Cheese, for being here.
Thank you, Boston.
Thank you.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan Edie have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations.
Into the savory moment. You might know Alaska chef Kristen Dixon from her 2021 cookbook, Living Within the Wild, written with her daughter, Mandy. Filled with personal stories about life as lodge keepers near Kachemak Bay, this book also contains fantastic recipes like caramel-topped blueberry brownies, which at the lodge are wrapped in birch bark and smoked over the smoldering coals of a campfire. But if you want Kristen's simpler fudge brownie recipe, you'll have to go all the way back to 1993 and the River Song Lodge cookbook. Here, you'll read how Dixon's family got their start long ago in a remote cabin on the Yentna River. Bread baking was a must at Riversong, and Dixon loaded 50-pound bags of flour along with yeast and powdered eggs into the small planes that ferried cargo from Anchorage to the bush. Back at the cabin, she dumped ingredients into a large bucket and stirred them with a paddle. Brioche rye and sourdough all went into the oven. The Dixons had a garden too. Black currants, snow peas, carrots, and potatoes grew along the riverbank, feeding hungry lodge guests and local wildlife. One night, Dixon woke to a slapping sound outside her bedroom window. A crucifer-loving beaver had helped themselves to all of the broccoli. Fish and wild game, mushrooms and berries all made the menu. And, of course, desserts. Fudge brownies with chopped pecans and a mix of bittersweet and milk chocolate were always piled on a big platter next to the lodge coffee pots. Kristen and her family operate a new lodge now, Tootka Bay, on the tip of the Kenai Peninsula. But that first brownie recipe will always have a home on the Yentna. Find Kristen Dixon's Riversong Lodge fudge brownie recipe at savorymoment.org. From the studios of KCAW in Sitka, Alaska, I'm Beth Short-Rhodes. Whatever is on your dinner table tonight, may you savor the moment.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Time now for another check-in with the Juno Chamber of Commerce. This month, I'm joined by Chamber Board President Laura McDonald. Gunath Cheesh, Hot Yigudi. Thank you so much, Laura, for joining me in the studio today. Wasaiti, how's it going?
Hi, Boston. It's good. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you in the studio. So what's happening?
So much is happening.
I know we mentioned this, and I know that Maggie sent me an email and said, yeah, we had the annual dinner, tickets go on sale. And of course, they sold out right away.
In a heartbeat.
That's coming up October 12th. So you're out of luck unless you're going to scalp them from one of your friends, I guess. But you're really celebrating the building community this year with that. And she may definitely wanted to thank a couple of different things, right?
So it's Blueprints to Bow Ties. And if you happen to know anyone that might have a table, that's going to be your one shot to grab an extra seat. And a big thank you to our sponsors of that dinner, Dawson Construction, Secon, First Bank, UAS, and Jensen Yorba Wall. Should be Absolutely. A really good time.
Okay. And then let's mention the annual meeting that you're going to be having soon.
So the annual meeting is October 3rd, and that's important because that's where we say goodbye to 30 to 40 years of experience with our board members that are terming out. And then we welcome in, we vote and elect five or six brand new board members that will be phasing in. So it's kind of a big deal for us at the chamber.
Who will probably have years of experience themselves.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. These are just specific chamber board years of experience on our local chamber board.
Oh, yeah. So these folks have been on the chamber board for 30 years.
They've been doing a lot for the business community for a long time. They've dedicated some serious decades. Yeah.
It's combined, time to go have a nice, snack and a meal and watch your favorite TV show. You've done your work.
And they say they're ready.
They say they're ready to not be doing that anymore. And that's, you said, next Thursday.
Thursday the 3rd.
Thursday the 3rd. That's the annual meeting. And of course, you can always find out more at junochamber.com about all these things and events that are coming up and things that will be happening. So what else do we have to talk about? You had some cool information that you wanted to share with
us. Yeah, so Maggie is not here today because she's at Southeast Conference in Ketchikan. And I got some brand new data fresh out of their meeting this morning.
Oh, wow.
Wrapping up the tourist season, Marine Coast Data was able to share some brand new numbers that tourism is now the number one job provider in Southeast Alaska and the number one wage provider in all of Southeast Alaska. So it's over 8,300 jobs and $347 million in earnings.
And that's not just Juneau, right? That's all of Southeast?
All of Southeast, yeah. And we'll get more once they get back to Juneau, we'll get more Juneau-specific data. But in February, at the last presentation, they said we were getting pretty close to tourism becoming number one here too. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, because there's that great report that comes out of this. Maggie, of course, is the executive director of the Juno Chamber, who's our usual guest in here for these check-ins. Maggie's down at this great conference where I know they do this great report that comes out that it's available to anybody who wants to read it, right? Called Southeast by the Numbers.
That's the one. It's beautiful slides. So it's super easy to digest and it's all really presentable. So even, someone like me who's just got a lowly master's degree in business, I can digest it.
Right. Or me who doesn't have any business experience. But that's kind of cool because not only in that report does it talk about tourism, but it talks about the mining industry and it talks about all government industry
the fishing
and the
industry,
state jobs, the fishing. You can really get sort of a really cool kind of economic overview of what's been happening in Southeast.
And then it talks about housing data, all the things that are childcare, things that are super relevant to all of Southeast, but also, of course, really relevant to Juneau right now. And it's all there in one really beautiful presentation. So it's good information for everybody to have.
That's cool. And were there some other things about this summer that you wanted to mention, or was it mostly those numbers?
Well, there's some super good news. I got an update from our tourism manager this morning. The tripper bus program that they've implemented from CBJ, where they have an extra bus following each bus that does the valley route and goes out to the glacier, has been super successful. So we aren't having anybody left behind at bus stops anymore. That was really great news to share. AT&T just released a huge press release today. They've invested over $250 million in infrastructure in Southeast Alaska over the last few years. So we're all getting huge upgrades to our bandwidth, Wi-Fi, and cellular service. And that's piggybacking on top of GCI, which did the same this year. And then Goldbelt did something really cool where they partnered with Royal Caribbean and put Starlink all over downtown to increase Wi-Fi. So that was another super big bonus to round out our tourism season. And then we have about flat numbers this year. So 2024 is matching 2023. And then because of those new MOAs, we're expecting fewer people in 2025 and then even fewer people in 2026.
We'll see as those get put into place and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting too, because I know that with Sitka and their Make Basic, their outage that happened, like a lot of folks and a lot of businesses were switching to Starlink, be able to get that service. And I know it's really valuable up north in Alaska, because it's harder to get certain cell service and other kinds of things, internet service and Wi-Fi and all that. So that's really cool that has become an option for folks.
Yeah, my husband was just in Sitka and he said there's Starlink everywhere on the sidewalks, on the rooftops. And they implemented it so quickly. So
I heard actually that it was so popular. Now, I don't know. This is not verified information, but that it was so popular that Starlink had to stop taking orders because they were getting capacity in that particular area. Because it's, you know, if you can go on the web and look at their map of where their satellites are, they're everywhere. It's sort of really amazing to see that technology is so helpful in a remote, you know, distanced area like Alaska and different areas in Alaska. So that's kind of cool. And so you originally got involved with the Juneau Chamber of Commerce. Why? I want your personal story, Laura.
Well, I am born and raised in Juneau, and I grew up working in a little gift shop downtown, worked there all through college, and then wound up buying that gift shop January 1st, 2020, which was fabulous timing to buy a shop downtown. And because of that, I was put on Mayor Weldon's Economic Stabilization Task Force, which was a group of community leaders trying to figure out the best thing to do with all of that incoming COVID money. So from there, it kind of became the leaping off board where it was like, oh, this is great. Oh, you should probably join this board and this board and this Rotary Club. And, you know, being a small business owner and being a member of this community, the chamber has kind of been the perfect fit for me because it's all the things I love. And our local chamber is having such a turnover, you know, with our new executive director. Maggie's a young woman, and she was really excited to find a young woman to be president her first year alongside. So we've kind of been such a great team this year. And then bringing in, you know, five or six brand new board members too. We're kind of having our next generation of business leaders really step out into the forefront and shape our future. And I just was so excited to be a part of that.
That's fantastic. Well, Laura, thanks for coming in and telling us a little bit about it and sharing the information for this year. And of course, the annual board meeting is next week. The annual dinner is on October 12th. You can try to find somebody who might own a table and maybe get a seat. And of course, you can find out more about Southeast Conference and the Southeast by the Numbers by Googling that, and you'll get some information. And of course, anything you need to know, you can go to junochamber.com. And so thanks for coming in, Gwyneth Cheese. Really appreciate you being here today.
Thanks, Boston.
Sounds wild. Hi, I'm Riley Woodford for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. A family is tide pooling on a Minas tide in Southeast Alaska, and they've discovered an odd-looking creature. It's a sea cucumber, an aptly named marine animal related to sea stars. About a foot long, this orange cucumber-shaped animal has leathery skin and seems like a bag full of water. Although it doesn't look very appetizing, there is an important commercial market for sea cucumbers. There are many species of sea cucumber, but the giant red sea cucumber is the only species commercially harvested in Alaska. Sea cucumbers crawl slowly across the seafloor, picking up algae and detritus on their tube feet and then transferring the nutrients to their mouth. They really are mostly water. They have no brain and very few organs beyond gonads and a digestive tract. Red sea cucumbers are harvested by divers who handpick them off the seafloor in a carefully managed fall fishery. An average red sea cucumber was worth about $2 in the 2015 commercial season. The harvested sea cucumbers are sliced lengthwise and 5 strips of white meat are scraped off the inside of the sea cucumber skin. Each animal yields just a few tablespoons of meat. The skin is boiled and salted, then ground up, and is often used as seasoning in Asian soups. Sea cucumber is popular in Korea as trepang, and it's also called sea ginseng. In Japan, it's known as namako. For Sounds Wild, I'm Riley Woodford. Sounds Wild is brought to you by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
You're listening to community-supported Juneau Afternoon on KTOO, 104.3 Juneau, 91.7 Juneau, Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. The Evening at Egan Lecture Series is sponsored by the University of Alaska Southeast. The series welcomes the Juneau community to engage with leading scholars and experts on all kinds of topics, from the role of art in society to climate change, sparking thought-provoking conversations. And lectures are in person and live streamed from the Egan Library on the Juneau campus. They're free, open to the public, and they are also recorded and archived on the UAS YouTube channel, which is really cool. And you can find out more at uas.alaska.edu/EganLecture. And this Friday, Dr. Skylar Baer presents Uncharted: Stories of Scientists Navigating Disabilities, Chronic Conditions, and Potential Bias in STEM Careers. And joining me now in the studio to talk a little bit more about the Evening at Egan Lecture Series is the interim dean of the School of the Arts, Dr. Allison Stottinger, and Friday's speaker, Dr. Skylar Baer, who has visited our show before in various capacities, talking about this very book, but also in her role as a storyteller and board member of Mudrooms, which is cool. But I'm good to the cheese for being here. Wasiati, how's it going?
Oh, it's going wonderful. And we're really excited about our speaker series and our speaker this Friday. I think this year for Evening at Egan, we've been thinking about this series as a chance to invite the community to think about engaging new perspectives and new ways of looking at really familiar problems or familiar disciplines. And Dr. Baer is definitely part of that.
That's so cool. And I know that there's going to be many more of these. It's always in the fall, the Evening at Egan. But also, before we even talk about that, Allison, welcome to Alaska.
Oh, thank you.
So I know you've been here about less than a year, right?
Yeah, I moved here in January just in time to get just dumped on with snow after telling everyone in Denver that it was not going to snow too much in Juneau.
That's so funny. So you came from Denver. And what is your background? Give me a little bit about your story.
Yeah, well, I'm a political scientist by training. I grew up in Washington State. I spent time in the East Coast and in the Midwest. I taught in Wisconsin for a really long time, and I've really deeply wanted to get back to the Pacific Northwest. And then my parents have been joking that I overshot a little bit and ended up here instead. But there's many plants here that are very familiar to me, and even the rain feels familiar to me. So even though it's been a new adventure, I've also felt like I'm coming home. So
that's so cool. And I know you have the political science background, but didn't you also go back and get a master's degree in creative writing?
Oh, I do have. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
You're a good CV sleuth. I'm this is kind of reflected in Evening at Egan. I'm really interested in multiple ways of knowing and the way that creative endeavors help us understand ourselves and the world better. And so, yeah, writing has always been something I've loved. And actually, I started writing after I was a teenager working up in Bristol Bay. I wrote some, a terrible collection of short stories about working in fish canneries. So I guess Alaska has been part of my creative life, too.
Oh, that's so cool. And I know you took the position here as the associate dean, but then quickly you were promoted to interim dean as Karen was promoted to, I can't remember what her title is.
Interim now. Provost.
Interim yes. Provost. Yeah, there's so many things going on. There's so many interims and steps going up there. And the Evening at Egan Lecture Series is so cool. And there's going to be many more. And the dates are all on the website, right? And so do we know of any of the speakers that are coming up past Skylar?
Sure. So next month, we're really excited that Professor Emerita Ernestine Hayes is going to be our speaker on Friday, October 18th. That's next month. And is going to really invite us to think about raven stories and the way that oral histories and Western science can be complementary. And so she's really continuing our theme of multiple ways of knowing, multiple ways of looking at our region and looking at our histories. And so we're really excited about that.
That is awesome. Yeah, Ernestine is a wonderful speaker. And whenever I hear her speak, it doesn't matter if I'm just having a conversation with her in daily life, like I learn something, right? I'm just instantly mm-hmm. sort of taken away. And she just, it's just, I just want to listen. And so that's really cool. But this Friday is someone else who is really cool and also has a great story, Dr. Skylar Bear. And you have a book that you wrote. Tell us a little bit about that book.
Yeah. So I co-edited it with Gabby Serrato-Marks, who's based in Boston. And we started this project probably in 2018 when we first started collecting stories from other scientists and former scientists who have disabilities or medical conditions. Even though sometimes people have conditions that would be considered a disability, they often will call it like a medical condition or chronic illness. There's sort of a lot of terms that people use, even though a lot of it is actually covered under the American with Disabilities Act. We have over 30 stories in this book. They're creative first person stories, and it's been out about a year, which is great because we're starting to get some really great reviews on Goodreads and from other sources from people who've already read the book.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I know you were on the show last year when the book mm-hmm. came out, and you told us a little bit about your story in terms of you had surgery when you were like 3 days old.
A day old, but yes.
A day old. Okay. that's even wilder. And that was for a heart condition.
Yeah. And then 25 years later, I developed what they call polymorphic arrhythmia, which just means many formed arrhythmia. And they put an ICD, which is kind of like a pacemaker, in my chest to sort of prevent me from having more bad rhythms, I guess. Although last year, I got it removed, and that's a whole other story, but it may be that I didn't even need it, which
the whole time
for 12 years. But anyway,
well, we'll look for a mudroom story on
yes,
that, right?
Yes,
at some point
yes,
later
yes,
in the
yes,
year.
Yes, yeah.
So what are we going to be talking about this Friday?
Yeah. So this Friday, I'm basically giving an introduction to the idea of like what disabilities are, why stories are such a powerful way to talk about facts and science and about the cultural fabric of science and who's invited and what's accessible. Talk a little bit about the formation of the book. I'm looking up some statistics actually on disability in Alaska for this talk. And I also want to talk a little bit about some of the feedback I've gotten from people who've read the book. I've heard from a couple of students that reading this book made them feel less lonely, and they really related to the experiences other people in this book, even if they didn't have the same condition or the same set of circumstances. They felt like they understood a lot of the people in this book because they've gone through similar experiences by having a disability or chronic illness while also trying to be a scientist.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And do people feel, maybe there's stories in the book that deal with this, or maybe the people you've heard from, but is there an idea that people feel like they have to hide that so that people don't find out? Because then there's some perceived mm-hmm. idea like, oh, you're less than because you can't be a good
yeah.
scientist if X, Y, Z, you have something, something.
Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, I hate to divide people up into groups, but there are people in the book with hidden disabilities that can do that, right? That can try to hide their disabilities or conditions because it's not very visible. Whereas there are people who, you know, they're born with a very visible condition and it's something they can't hide, and they still have to deal with certain, I'd say, lack of support.
Yeah.
But it's different than being, you know, having the ability to hide the condition. But that doesn't always make things better. It can make things more stressful because you still might not be getting the support you need to flourish in the sciences.
Or you feel lonely in your
yes.
cause because you can't talk about it with, you know,
right.
you're going to school or you're exploring things with colleagues, and you can't bring up your actual personal life because you feel like maybe they're going to then judge you or something.
Right.
Like
yeah,
that.
Exactly. And I think a lot of students can really relate to being scared to share certain like conditions with either professors or peers. And one of the, I just wanted to bring up that one of the reviews I got was from a professor who they read this book in their diversity, equity, inclusion faculty group, and it actually got some professors who have been very skeptical of students that say they have disabilities around the corner in terms of being empathetic towards them.
Oh.
Which I was very pleased to read. And I do not know this person either who wrote this review, but it was really exciting that reading personal stories could get some professors to be less skeptical of those students that say they have this condition, you know, that's affecting their ability to do their work, which happens all the time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, it is the Evening at Egan Lecture Series. Dr. Skylar Bear will be speaking this Friday, September 27th at 7 p.m. It's not just for students. It's for anybody who wants to make their way out to the Egan Library and have a chat with this wonderful person and hear this speaking happening at 7 p.m. You can find out more at uas.alaska.edu/Egan Lecture or just type into your favorite search engine Evening at Egan Lecture Series, and I'm sure it will pop up. So Allison, Skylar, thank you so much for coming in and sharing a little bit about this with us today.
All right, thank you.
Gunachish. That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Have a wonderful Wednesday. On tomorrow's show, we preview some theatrical endeavors happening this weekend from Theater in the Rough and Theater Alaska, plus St. Vincent de Paul's Friends of the Poor walk/run. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Find the show online at kto.org/JunoAfternoon. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Lisa Purvis. Thanks. And have a wonderful Juno evening.